Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. I remember a long time ago that there was this group of bloggers, content creators, who were making really good money. And I thought that that whole thing, frankly, died and that they were replaced by, I'm looking at the smile on Deacon's face, I thought that they were replaced by Instagram stars, YouTube stars, and the blogging now is so saturated in such old technology that it's not producing money. Joining me is yet another guest whose business is about creating content. You guys are using the blog format. Am I right? Fair to say that, Deacon?
That's correct.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of publishers are using blog software, even as far as WordPress, but they still prefer not to call it a blog. And I would say that yours is not so much a blog. It's just a publication. The fact that you happen to use a blog technology doesn't mean much. But still, what blows me away, Deacon Hayes, is that you're making money in content, which I thought was now moving towards video, but you're doing a lot of text in a world where I thought that, in personal finance, where I thought it was saturated and super competitive, and you're doing well. All right, I should stop saying, how is this possible? And just introduce my guest. Deacon Hayes is the founder of Well Kept Wallet. His goal is to transform people's lives through personal finance education. He got into it when he discovered that he had a lot of debt and said, you know what? I'm just going to blog my way through this thing. And as he did, he discovered a love for writing, which turned into this business that I am here to interview him about. I want to find out how he did this. Obviously, I'm in the content space, so I want to learn from you. And many people in my audience who don't have companies could have an easy entry into business with content. All right. This interview where we talk about that is sponsored by two phenomenal sponsors. The first, if you're a systems person the way Deacon is, and we're going to hear about his systems orientation, you're going to want to know Trainual. It's software that will make systemizing and organizing your business beautiful. Trainual.com/Mixergy. And the second, if you're ready to hire a developer, I'm going to tell you that you should go to toptal.com/Mixergy. Even someone as cheap as Deacon will want to spend top money on TopTal. Deacon, good to have you here.
Great to be here.
What's an article that you're especially proud of having published recently? Let's give people a taste of what Well Kept Wallet is doing.
So recently, that's a good question. As we've developed, we've published so much more content. I'll say one that I'm really passionate about that not too distant is about passive income, because that was one thing that I never really realized was possible. I was very much in the W-2 mindset of like, maybe I could make more money doing sales and stuff like that, but I work, I get paid. And so the idea of passive income really just intrigued me. And so it shares a lot of personal experiences. It shares a lot of actual people that have done it in different industries. And so that's one that I'm pretty proud of.
You wrote that yourself a while back. You updated it just a few days ago. One of the items on the list is buy music rights. I can buy music rights?
Yeah. So that's the crazy thing is like, there's ways to make money where you're like, hey, I'm passionate about music, but how do I do that? I'm not talented. Well, maybe I could buy the rights of somebody that is selling their music rights and make the royalties off of it. It's totally possible. And so, the opportunities are just amazing, especially with technology and where we're at today, apps, everything, being remote. It's incredible.
You actually linked over to a site. I didn't know about this. There's something called Royalty Exchange. It's like, it's a marketplace for people's royalty, right?
Right.
It looks like if I could, for $8,800, I could have bought the royalties to gospel, R&B, and global pop. And I'm guessing then it sells on now these music licensing sites, right?
Yeah, and that one personally, I don't know a lot about. A lot of these things we're just researching, we're vetting to make sure that they're accurate and that they have third-party validation, those kind of things. But yeah, that's my understanding of it as well.
I see another one, buy a laundromat. I had a cousin, an uncle, growing up. He's just saying, where do I put my money? I need to make money. And he decided to buy a laundromat, which seemed like such a out of left field type of thing, but apparently it's just a bunch of machines. You just have to empty out the quarters, make sure it works. It was not the most passive business, but it was a passive business.
Yeah. And I actually considered it myself. I talked to a guy that owns some laundromats and he's like, unless you have a pickup truck and a bucket full of tools and want to go work on stuff, or you hire somebody that does it. Right. And so the problem with something like that is it's better on scale. If you have multiple laundromats and you have one person that does the handyman work, then it's passive, right? But if you're like, I'm going to be a sole operator and I got to fix them myself, you're right. Yeah, it's definitely not
managing machines is the problem.
Right.
Okay. And the way that you make your money, from what I can see on your site, is you get paid affiliate commissions when you refer somebody to, say, Lyft to drive, or when you refer somebody to Ally Bank when they put money there, right?
Yeah, we have a lot of affiliate partnerships in the space, and they definitely span the spectrum. But yeah, that's how we primarily make money. And we do have display ads, but not as much of our revenue.
What percentage would you say is affiliate?
Like 80% is affiliate, 20% okay. Display.
And you're a guy who told our producer, the first sentence in my producer's notes, Ari, who you talked to before this interview, is she asked you, what were you like as a kid? She's trying to get to know you. And you said, I liked money. Well, what was the passion for money? Was it just you tell me.
So it's freedom, I think, is what I really like.
Even as being a kid, you associated freedom with it?
Yeah, well, I associated choice, right? Mm-hmm. Freedom of choice. And so if I have money, I can buy the candy I want. I can buy the Nintendo 64 game that I want. I could, I could go to the movie that I want, right? So that freedom to choose. I come from a low-income family, single mom. So I didn't have a lot of choice as a young kid. And if I wanted extra opportunities, I had to make the money to make those happen.
You had to take one of those Scantron tests where you have to fill in the bubble with a number 2 pencil. And if it's not filled in all the way, you may not get credit for it. You saw an opportunity in that too as a kid.
Yeah. So I realized that, hey, number 2 pencils were a hot commodity on test day. So I'm like, I wonder if I could buy number 2 pencils in bulk and sell them on test day, you know? And so if you break it out, let's say it was 5 cents a pencil and I could sell it for 25 cents, right? Yep. It's like quintupling my money, if that's a word. And so, I definitely like to see those opportunities where value can be added.
I would see those too, and I love it. I feel like a lot of businesses having the guts to ask for the money. And when you're a kid, having the guts to do anything is pretty hard. Did you even have to get over that? Or were you just so drawn to the math of this that you had to see it through?
I always viewed it as value, right? Like, uh-huh. I think if you're selling something that's valuable, it kind of sells itself, right? Okay. You're like, oh, I forgot my number 2 pencil. Like, I need this. Deacon's providing me a solution for my problem right now. It's only a quarter, right? Like, he doesn't care that I'm making 20 cents on it.
Right, right.
I will say there were times where I was like, I was selling Tempur-Pedic mattresses and I was like, I was broke. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Who the heck will pay $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 for a mattress, right? So I didn't believe in it back then. I believe in it now and I've got one and I love it. But yeah, you have to believe in it.
And if
as an adult, yeah. Not as a kid.
Why do you believe in Tempur-Pedic mattresses? What is it about that?
So like aches and pains, like I'm a turner, you know, like I turn at night. Mm-hmm, and so with a Tempur-Pedic mattress, like the pressure points aren't there. So you're not getting that, the coils poking you and you wanting to move to kind of get circulation. And so like after I got my first one, I bought it used from a buddy of mine that had a mattress type store, like a little one. And it just changed my life. I was like, man, like I'm not tossing and turning. I don't feel aches and pains. And I'm like, I was in my 20s. You know, I'm like, I didn't know this was a thing, you know?
I didn't know it was a thing in your 20s. I still sleep on the cheapest mattress. I'm so glad that it doesn't bother me. I go to the store and I buy the cheapest mattress. Though now that I see that there's some online places, I see the difference. I would just get one of the good ones delivered and forget the store.
And here's the challenge though. Like when you travel, if I go to a hotel, it's harder to sleep, right? I don't have my Tempur-Pedic mattress.
Right.
I sleep with a weighted blanket, which I'm not going to travel with a weighted blanket.
You got to tell me about this thing. So we were in Guatemala because I was working with an editor in Guatemala. And I said, I got to go see this guy. I said, Olivia, do you want to come to Guatemala? She goes, of course I want to come to Guatemala. We flew to Guatemala, enjoyed the experience. He showed us around. The best memory that I have of the place is the night's sleep that I got because the blanket was incredibly heavy. It was a duvet that just, boom, weighed me down. I slept really well and I was energized the next day much more than I'm obviously energized already. Imagine this times 3. I look online for weighted blankets. These freaking things are tiny, right? They're just one person at a time. I want the whole, you're nodding. I want the whole duvet to be heavy for both of us to be weighted down. That doesn't exist.
It probably does, but that's what I have. So we have a king size bed and I have a twin because my wife, you know, she sleeps differently than I do. So I have it on top of my side and she doesn't have one on her side.
And is it weird to have an extra thing just on your side of the bed?
Not anymore, because I think it's all about value, right? Like the fact that I sleep better, right? I toss and turn less. I get more REM sleep, so I track it on my Fitbit. Yeah. You know, I'm like, the value's there, so I don't care how it looks necessarily.
You know what? I should just buy one this winter from Amazon and see what it's like, because with Amazon, I could just return it to the local Amazon and store and see. I think it's still a little weird if the two of us are not sleeping under the same blanket. I would imagine that I'm going to get blown away and say, this makes sense. Forget us sharing it because it's my own thing. Or I might see an opportunity and say, somebody's got to make, you know how like their beds now where you could get the right firmness for your side and your partner gets the right firmness for theirs and you could, right? I wonder if after I try it, I'm going to say, somebody's got to make a weighted blanket where it's my weight for me, her weight for her, because she weighs considerably less than me, right? And you don't want the same weight on top of her, right? I wonder if that's the thing. Maybe that's my next business, dude.
It totally could be. It's like, right? E-commerce is huge. It's blowing up. People weighted blankets. Yeah, that could be huge.
And none of these things make sense. Just get a duvet that weighs you down. All right, I could see why you loved it. You didn't like Cutco knives. I feel like I would have loved selling Cutco knives temporarily just to learn. Did you learn anything with this door-to-door knife sales business that you did?
I totally did. I learned that companies can make a premium off of a product based off its performance, right? Like these Cutco knives delivered, like you could cut a penny and you could do weird stuff. And you're like, so it's a sharp knife, you know, and lasts long, durable. But it's right now, we use regular knives. Like I think we got our knives at Walmart, you know, like I don't personally
need that sharp.
What's that? Yeah, I don't need to cut a penny. Like I don't have to cut a penny every day.
Did you literally cut a penny as part of your shtick, your sales pitch?
I don't remember personally doing it, but I remember them doing that at like the demonstration when they're saying, hey, do you want to be a rep here? We'll show you how this knife works, that kind of thing. I think I cut other things like leather or other stuff that I could, you know, it was a little bit easier to carry around.
One of my best interviews was with someone who sold Cutco knives, Hal Elrod. I said, dude, how are you getting these strangers to buy it from you? I learned so much from him. Like one of the things that I learned was he would go in and he would say, I'm not here to sell you. I'm here to just get a list of people who you think would want to buy this, right? That just takes off all the pressure to buy. And if they're going to refer you, why wouldn't they buy, right? Number one. Number two, he would have them make a list and he would just go through. He would have a list numbered 1 through 20 on a piece of paper and they would sit and they would just start to brainstorm who would want these Cutco knives, right? So now he's got them trained to think about 20 people instead of what they might do, which is like, here's 3 people. It's like a bunch of stuff like that I learned from him that have been incredibly helpful over the years. You have any tips that you learned? I know your grandfather told you at an early age, learn to sell and you'll never go hungry, right?
Yeah. I mean, sales, I think it was just kind of an evolution. I think I wanted to sell stuff that I actually believed in, right? And I personally didn't believe in knives, you know, like in the fact that there was added value that I would get in a Cutco knife versus a Walmart knife.
Still, did you learn anything from them? Because they are an incredible sales operation.
Yeah, I think it was friends and family, right? So you go to all your friends and all your family and you say, hey, look at this is this business opportunity that I'm getting into and, you know, want to show you what I'm doing. So very similar, like maybe I'm not selling it to you, but I just want to show it to you. And then obviously they would buy. And then you say, hey, could you refer, 3 to 5 people that I could talk to? But then it started to get awkward, right? I think for me, once you start to get outside of the friends and family, yeah. And you're like, now I'm going to go into, you know, a friend of a friend's living room or kitchen and do this demonstration. That was a little bit more uncomfortable for me. So I had to kind of get outside my comfort zone.
Okay. All right. It seems like where you ended up was selling hardwood floor after you graduated from school. Am I right?
That's right.
And that's when you got married, 2008. You and your wife are going through your finances and you discover what?
That we were deeply in debt. And this is, you know, I mean, this is the... right at the recession time, right? Like 2008, 2009. So we're realizing like I had these properties that were worth half of what I paid for them. We've got 52 grand in debt. Hey, we're in our 20s. Like we shouldn't be here. We need to figure out how to get out. And that was kind of this aha moment of like, okay, we gotta do something about this.
How much debt did you have?
So we had 52 grand in consumer debt outside of the houses. And then I probably had close to 400,000 in like mortgage debt on 2 different properties that I purchased.
Okay. What ended up happening with the properties? Did you lose money on them when you sold them or did the market turn around?
Yeah. So one I got foreclosed on, unfortunately. I lost my renters and I had a land lease, which this is crazy. I didn't know anything. I didn't know much about land leases.
You were leasing the land, owning the box, the house on top of it. The box goes down in value because obviously people are using the house and it loses value. The land is where the value is, and got it. And you're kind of locked into a lease with them.
Yeah, but the land lease went up. So you're like, how in the world could you increase the land lease? They're like, oh, it's been 30 years since it's been increased. So this is the natural.
He increased the rent on you.
On the land. And then the property value goes down and I lose my renters. And I'm like, oh, this is horrible. You know? And so I tried to do a short sale. Didn't work out. The other one I held on to, and I think I lost like 60 grand or something like that on that one. I held it for like 11 years or whatever it was. And it was just I learned a lot.
Lost that much money.
I still lost that much money. Yeah.
Let me ask you something. When you're going through the Great Recession, it was a terrible economic time, with debt, with these properties that aren't working, with you selling flooring, do you look at yourself and say, what happened to me? I'm the guy who aspired to do so much. I even sold pencils as a kid. I learned how to do this. What happened?
Yeah, I think I realized that something was off. And that it needed to change, right? I knew that I didn't really like working for other people. So while I was selling wood floors, I was reading Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to my boss. So I created this eBay store and I was selling stuff. I would buy stuff for less and sell it for more, just kind of arbitrage. And I went to my boss and I'm like, you know, I didn't tell him that I was reading the 4-Hour Work Week, but I'm like, hey, would it be possible that if I worked from home a couple days a week, because that was one of the things Tim Ferriss talked about, my boss was like, no, you need to come into the showroom. And I'm like, but people come by appointment. So I could just come if they just, he's like, no, but I need you here if people just show up. And okay. I'm like, so that was kind of this aha moment of like, gosh, I don't have freedom. I don't have the time and flexibility that I want. So I gotta do something about that.
All right. And you said to your wife, we're going to get rid of this debt. And you said to yourself, and I'm guessing also to your wife, we're going to figure out a way for me to get more freedom. At what point did you start blogging about what you were going to do to get rid of the debt?
So 2010. So it was right at the tail end of us paying off our debt. So it was, Hey, I realized that there was this blogging thing and I'm like, man, it'd be great to share the things that I've been learning and I've been doing. Cause I was really excited about, I was more excited about, you know, paying off our debt than I was about selling wood floors. And so I thought, hey, I'll start this website. And at the time it was like deaconhayes.wordpress.com or whatever it was. And just kind of blog about my thoughts. And then eventually, you know, I thought, hey, I need to come up with a name, came up with Well Kept Wallet. And transitioned everything over. But yeah, it was really just journaling. Like, here's how we bought a car used. And here's how we, you know, used the debt snowball. And here's how I delivered pizzas on the side to get extra income to pay down our debt. You know, all that kind of stuff.
It is kind of exciting when as a couple, you've got a goal to go for. Olivia and I have been missing that. She's been pushing for that too. What's our goal as a couple, as a family? What are we aiming towards? To have that zero debt is such a clear goal to work towards, right?
Oh, it totally was. And my wife was on board because her family was bad with money. I was on board. My family was bad with money. So we're like, hey, we got to change this, not just for us, but for like the future generations of our family.
Right. You don't want to set them up now. And plus just, did you feel like you got closer together through this?
Oh, for sure. You know, I actually thought that we'd have a lot of challenges because we come from very different backgrounds. Like she comes from an affluent family. I come from a poor family. So we have very different tastes and like going out and stuff, but we're very much working together towards a common goal and definitely grew us closer.
All right. So then you've got this blogging thing, you're enjoying writing. Take me through how you ended up doing this professionally.
So I'll clarify. I didn't necessarily enjoy writing, but I enjoyed the fact that I could help people through like a blog, right? Because I realized not too far into it that I'm like, I'm not the best writer. And I'm more like, I love podcasts. I love to talk. I love to do video. Like I love that stuff. But yeah, so I had a buddy that he emailed me one day and he's like, hey Deacon, I've got a client from USAA that would like to advertise on your site. And I'm like, on my site? Like I don't get 10 visitors a month, right? Like, but he's like, yeah, you got a personal finance site. He's trying to get some more exposure or whatever, you know, for 150 bucks a month or whatever it was. Would you put a, you know, something in your sidebar? And I'm like, sure. I'm like, well, that's cool. You know? And I'm like, So then I found AdSense, and I'm like, oh, I want to play around with that. And so it's kind of these little things where I'm like, okay, what can I do now to get some more revenue? And then one says, well, how do I get more revenue? I got to get more traffic. You know, so I started researching, how do I get more traffic? Like, well, there's social media, but that goes up and down. Well, then there's SEO. Well, Google can send you traffic on a consistent basis. And so I started learning that. And so started getting traffic from all these different areas, started adding different revenue sources, testing them out. And that's kind of how it all began.
What was working for you on the SEO side? I know that you got really good at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, back in the day, it was actually more PR. So I would do like news, like local news stuff. That was really helpful. But then that's probably the best thing from an SEO standpoint, now that I think about it. And I wasn't doing it intentionally for that, right? I had a local station, and this is something cool. So Fox has all these affiliates around the United States.
Yep.
And so it's the local Fox 10. They're like, hey, we want to come to your place and interview you about paying off your debt. And I'm like, sweet. You know, they come to our condo, it's this tiny place, and they, you know, they have the camera crew in there. At the end, they're like, hey, do you mind if we like video your budget? And I had this budget that I created that, you know, to get out of debt. And I'm like, sure, why not? And they're like, where can they find it? I'm like, well, they go to wellkeptwallet.com, you know? And so all of a sudden I get all these people coming to my website to download my budget form, you know? And I'm like, this is so cool. But the SEO side of it was, I was getting all these links from all these really credible sources from around the United States, linking to Well Kept Wallet to get this budget form. Not buy, it was free. But anyways, in that few days, I made a few grand, and I was like, oh my gosh, like up to that point, maybe I made like $1 a month in AdSense, you know? So I just started to realize like, you know, oh, there's value in getting this traffic, getting these links to now where we're going to start to get, you know, people coming to the site. So that's probably the first thing from an SEO and PR standpoint.
I see the spreadsheet here and in their report. It's it's on your site. It's one of the few YouTube videos that you've got up, but it's car insurance, $200, gym, $40, dry cleaners, $30. It's a spreadsheet with your itemized expenses. And people were coming to your site to buy that spreadsheet?
Well, to get it for free. Yeah, I misspoke. Okay. Yeah, they weren't buying it, but to get it for free, yeah.
And then when they get it for free, how did you end up making money from that? Because of all the AdSense revenue.
The AdSense revenue, yeah. And my thought was, yeah, it was kind of a lead magnet, and I didn't know what a lead magnet was back then.
Look at you. Look at you in the video here. Wow. I could see it. You were good on camera, though. All right. Let me take a moment and talk about my first sponsor, and then we'll get back into the story. My first sponsor is a company called TopTal. Have you hired TopTal? You, Deacon?
I haven't.
Are you on WordPress?
No, I've used Upwork and stuff.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Upwork, low price. Obviously, they're good people. But imagine if you want to make, since you're on a WordPress site, imagine if there's something especially powerful that you want to add to your WordPress site, especially custom. The Upwork people are going to be really hard to find somebody who's good. You have to then spend time also going through and vetting the people who are in there, because even if they have high ratings, they can have high ratings just doing basic stuff like installing a plugin. They do the installation, they get their 5-star ratings, they get to look good on the platform. But if you have something especially tough, like for us, it was search. I had over 1,000 interviews on the site. I needed search that worked quickly. I needed the search that worked with tags. I needed search that worked with keywords, but not all keywords, right? This whole thing. We just went to TopTal. I said, I know you have people who work on all these other platforms. You have somebody who works with WordPress. They said, sure. They got me on a call with two different people. Actually, they got my brother on a call with two different people. He picked the right person for us. I thought this was going to be a long-term project. Within days, the guy solved this problem that had been dogging us for years, where people were really struggling to find stuff on the site. And that's the power of hiring the best of the best developers. If you're out there listening to me and there's a little project, a little part of your project, anything that you have not been able to get done, challenge TopTal to get it done. We're talking about getting Google level developers, especially these days. There are people who don't want to live in Silicon Valley anymore the way that they used to. They just want to live wherever. And if they can't do it with their current company, if they can't do it with their current setup, they want to have the freedom to be able to do it with companies through TopTal. So great developers on TopTal, more and more these days, available to you to hire often within days, and they will get work done like you'd never seen it before. Really, 10x developers available. If you go to toptal.com/mixergy, Deacon, I know you like a good deal. They will give you 80 hours of developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period. That's top is in top of your head, tal is in talent, toptal.com/mixergy. TopTal.com/mixergy. let's continue with the story. That started sending people over to your site. Things were starting to go. And then you started researching SEO. You started learning from Rand Fishkin, from Neil Patel. What did you do that was especially effective? What was working for you in SEO?
What I realized was my skill set was the 500 word post, right? And I was more like, hey, here's my ideas, but fleshing them out and kind of getting research and all, I just wasn't that good at it. So one of the things I did was I hired a writer who was a mom of four kids, and she was a personal finance writer, and she still works for me today. And she is amazing. So she would write these longer posts, you know, 1,000, 1,500 words back then, whereas more fleshed out, more researched. And you know, that really, I mean, in 2011, 2012, whatever time frame that was, kind of set us apart, because a lot of people were doing the 500, you know, 700 word posts. So really the longer form articles, researched, citing the sources and linking to them. You know, that was kind of the initial phase of figuring out SEO, just saying, hey, how can we answer the user's query as best we can, you know, within this 1,000 to 1,500 word, you know.
Yeah, Neil for a long time was pushing for longer articles. And I didn't listen because, frankly, I don't want to listen. I don't want to read long articles. I feel like if you're the writer, unless we're talking about a book, unless we're talking about a few rare cases, I feel like the writer's job should be to sum it up for me. Give it to me in fewer words. I should be more excited about a 500 word article than about a 5,000 word article. But Neil convinced me that people really will bookmark, they'll share, they'll save the longer articles. And people don't need to read all 500. They want to hunt through what they're looking for. And Google certainly value that more, right? Yeah.
They do. I think Google has changed dramatically. So I used to have word count was a major factor in what we did. Mm-hmm. But basically now it is more about what's necessary for the user's query. So we're actually making some posts shorter. But that being said, we're still usually over 2,000 words, right? We've had posts that are 8,000 words. Like it's all over the board. But really it comes down to like, how do you answer the user's query the most effectively, right? They come to your page, they get exactly what they're looking for. They don't bounce off.
What's your writing process? You know, how does it start? Sorry, we've got a little bit of a lag. I'm sensing it here with the Zoom. But what's your process? Where does the idea for an article come from? And take me through this ideation towards publishing, towards updating, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, really, we started off with these three categories: make money, save money, pay off debt. So then we're looking for different ideas within those categories that we want to write for. So I would go and I would research, and I'd use, forget what the plugin, I think it's called Keyword Surfer now, or SEO Surfer, but it's like an extension for Chrome, and it'll tell you how many people are searching for a given keyword. They're like, oh, there's, you know, 1,000 people searching for this, you know, and it fits within our categories. Let's write it. Then it gets assigned to a writer who is good in that category. So Lori, who writes for us, is a licensed realtor. So if it's a real estate, you know, making money in real estate, she gets it. Josh Patoka is really good at doing investing articles. So if it's more investing, like in the stock market, he gets it. So we have people that have different kind of skill sets and knowledge base. And so then they have a template that we have in Asana, which is our project management software, that they got to go by, that says, hey, this is what it needs to look like. Here's the, you know, header two, header one. This is what the different, you know, say summary at the bottom. Like there's just a template that we have basically. And we can massage it basing on what it is. But so then they get it assigned in Asana. And we have a bunch of different people. So we have Jess that works on the images, and Patty that does SEO stuff, and Julie does like the overall management of everything. But she'll go in there and just make sure that the process keeps moving. Everybody has a due date. And so this person will submit an outline. This person approves the outline. This person, you know, writes the content. This person, you know, submits the content. It's approved by this person, you know. So it's really, there's a system around how the content's built, which is very different than when I started, where it was literally, I would type and publish, you know. It was that simple. But now that's kind of more what we do today is use Asana to kind of manage the process.
Are you also documenting beyond Asana, or is it just everything's in Asana checklist?
Yeah, so we use Google Docs. So mm-hmm. all of the articles are within their own respective Google Docs, and then they're edited with, the suggested changes, all that kind of stuff, track changes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we tried doing that in a WordPress site. We had our own little WordPress site that you had to log in using your Mixergy email address, and then you'd see an article. The problem with that was people couldn't edit it, they couldn't give suggestions, and mistakes would just stay in there. The reason I'm asking you is because I know that you run your company largely through these types of systems, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, we've tried it all too. I would love to just do it in WordPress, but then you'd have like where WordPress forever, whatever reason, it won't save it. It's like you have this like spinning wheel of death that just never goes away. And you're like, I just made all these changes, you know? And so it's like just having it in Google Docs seems to be the easiest.
I didn't have that. I had that. Nobody feels like they should edit a WordPress doc, right? They have to hit the edit button. No matter how much you tell them that it could be undone, don't worry about it. They don't want to hit the edit button. Then they have to go find it in the doc, and then they have to go submit and then publish. And it's just, no one was doing it. And we finally switched over to, we did Google Docs for a while. We were just doing all kinds of different things. Why don't you have a bigger team? I know that you told our producer it's just there's one employee, right? Is it you or you and one other person?
Well, no. So technically I'm the only employee. I have all subcontractors. Yeah. It's one of those things where I kind of looked at, are you familiar with the Mexican American fisherman story?
No. What is it?
So I'll make it really short. So, this American goes down to Mexico for vacation. He sees this guy fishing, and, he can see, he's got one boat and he's only out for a couple hours, comes back. And the American, with his capitalist ways, he's like, you could actually go out for longer and get more fish. And then the Mexican's like, well, so then what do I do? Well, then if you have more fish, you make more money, you buy another boat. Well, then what do you do? Well, then you hire somebody else to do the next boat, and you do this until you have a fleet of boats, right? He's like, how do you spend your time right now? And he's like, well, I go out and I fish for a couple days or a couple hours, and then I come home and I play with my kids. I play a little guitar. I take a siesta. I have lunch. Like I spend time with my wife. And he's like, man, you're wasting a lot of time. Like you could be going out there building this empire, right? And so he's like, well, okay, so after I build this empire, what do I do? You sell it. Well, okay, what do I do when I sell it? He's like, well, then you go home, you play with your kids, you have a siesta, yeah. You play guitar. Like he already had what he wanted, right? Yeah. Why am I going to go build? So it's like, I could build this big thing and I could have all these employees and be a nerd wallet or a penny hoarder. But there is a lot more that comes with that, And at the end of the day, I kind of have what I want.
About this though? If you did have other people, you could take some time away and know that the company would continue. You could get hit by a bus. You could get COVID and be out of commission for 4 months and still get back into work.
Yeah. So here's where these books really change that, right? So I read The One Thing by Gary Keller. I read Essentialism and then 4-Hour Workweek. I think those are probably the three books where it's like, how do you automate your business to where you're not necessary? And so I did that. So I'm actually not necessary to the day-to-day operations. If I was to get hit by a bus, Julie could still run it. My wife has her contact info. Like the show would go on. Like, so.
Okay. So you're saying the system works so well that the system is running the company, not you. Even though I see your name in the byline, it's not because you need to be there. It's because you're just doing one of the jobs.
Yeah. Well, even in if you look at the article, I mean, the stuff that's on there now, like you said earlier, is because it's been updated, right? I'll go in and I'll say, hey, let's add something about music royalties because that's a new thing, or at least new to me. So I think that, I still am involved, but on the day-to-day stuff, it's not necessary for me.
All right. Did you hire people? Did you go through this bad process and then get burned and decide you're going to have to go, you're going to scale back?
So I've gone through a lot of people. I shouldn't say a lot of people, but over a course of 8 years of hiring mm-hmm. people. But I will say I've got some people that have been pretty consistent for multiple years. So when I find them, they seem to stick around because they just enjoy what they do. And so that's one of the things I've learned about like hiring the right people and being kind of a gatekeeper there, because those people are very important to me and to the vision of Well Kept Wallet and helping people transform their lives. So So yeah, now we have a pretty good process about that. A lot of people that work for us are actually referred by friends or family. So it's most of the people, there's a pretty close connection from, like, my editor is the cousin of one of my main writers. The lady that runs my website went through a class that I taught like 10 years ago called Financial Peace University. So it's like all these people are closely recommended.
What I mean is, did you try to hire people and build a bigger business, be a nerd wallet, and then realize it's not for you? Or did you just know that from the beginning?
Oh, no. So part of the story we didn't really talk about, but when I quit my job to do Well-Kept Wallet, mm-hmm. I wasn't making like stable income. And so I had this SEO skill set, and I decided to create an SEO company, a search engine optimization company. And I had employees in that, and it was a grind. It was a customer service business. It was, managing employees. And I was like, man, this is not really how I'm wired or what I want to do. So I had a taste of it on a smaller scale. And I was like, man, I could only imagine if I had 40 or 50 employees, right? Like what would this look like? What would my time be like? You know, what fires would I be putting out? And so I just kind of had a glimpse of it when I had that business.
You know, I hired a consultant to come in and give me some feedback on my business. One of the things she said in her report was, she said, nobody cares about Mixergy like Andrew does. And I thought about it. It's true. And it was painful. The sense that there's nobody here who cares as much about the work, who's there for it, like me, it is hampering the growth. It means that everyone's coming in to get their salary. Now, maybe it's an exaggeration at this point. You met Ari, our producer. She clearly cares. She clearly spends a lot of her emotional energy on the conversation with you, right? She's not just trying to fill in a form for me for the pre-interview. And same goes for other parts. But it is kind of maybe not lonely, but alone-ish to not have somebody care as much, to not have somebody whose financial well-being and dreams are tied up in Mixergy. Don't you feel that for you too?
I could definitely resonate with the loneliness because everybody except one is a remote, you know, subcontractor. So mm-hmm. I don't see people on a regular basis. But I will say I have the lady that runs my blog shares our content on her personal Facebook page all the time. And I'm like, I don't even do that. I'm like, yeah. I'm really impressed with like her level of buy-in. Like she'll read something and she'll want to share it with people. Like it's like revolutionary to her. And I'm like, so I feel blessed that she's on our team because she literally does like love this stuff and she loves sharing it with other people. And so I think it is a lot has to do with finding the right people, the Aries, the Julies of the world that really care about it, you know? But yeah, there is a loneliness to like being I'm technically a solopreneur, right? And I definitely like the idea of having, you know, the ability to have that, but I also know the weight that comes with it as well, having run a company with employees before.
All right, let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor, Trainual. I think you're going to like Trainual. Tell me what you think of this. Here's the idea behind Trainual. They created an app that's customized towards a systems-oriented thinking that you and I have. When you go to Trainual, you could have like an onboarding training manual, right? With all the different things that people need to know about how to work with your company. Like, how do they submit their invoices? What do you need back from them so that you can send them money? Do you do a wire? Do you do checks? And so on. You have these policies. You put it in there. It's as easy as writing in a Word doc or a Google doc. Actually, it's as easy as filling out a form because they tell you step by step, here's what you need. And the beauty of it is when somebody goes through it, you have a record of them having gone through it. And when you make an adjustment to the process, everyone who went through the old system can now get an update that says you now need to go through and see this new improved new change process. Even if they hadn't worked with you for 6 months, you know when they come back, there's just one piece that's brand new to them that they need to be aware of. That's the beauty of Trainual. What do you think of that?
That's awesome. Yeah, I love that. I mean, the ability to be able to say, hey, I've got this process and it's updated. And for anybody that's a subcontractor, or if they're an employee too. Yeah, that's cool.
And where Google Docs fails is they don't let you embed properly. They make it hard to embed GIFs, which sometimes you want, right? If you want somebody to know, drag from here to there, I do a GIF and then I have to host it on somewhere and then I have to embed. It's just a pain. They don't allow you to embed videos especially easily. And they don't give you a record of who's gone through this process and who hasn't. All right. Anyone out there who's like us, who believes in systems, my whole company is systemized, needs to know about Trainual. If you go to trainual.com/mixergy, they've got a video that explains to you immediately why this software makes sense, why it will allow you to run your team in an organized way, no matter where they are. And these days, everybody is remote, and how often they work with you, right? So if somebody's worked with you only once a month, you still want them to have the process down right and organized well. Trainual.com/mixergy. I always slap and make noise like boom. I think earlier I also got a little bit loud and I yelled into my microphone and this green thing goes red, but I don't notice it. What it should do is just go flash in my eyes red, Andrew. You're yelling there. There. Now it's orange. Should I go? Let me see. Trainual. Oh, sorry, guys. Did that hurt your ears? No, you're not even listening with earphones, okay. So you're fine. Good. I wonder if it hurt our listeners' ears. Let's come back into the story. What I'm curious about with you is, how do you get your affiliates? Are you working directly with companies like Lyft or using a network?
With a lot of the brands, we do work directly with them now. If people starting out, right, at network is where we still have a lot of our relationships. So like CJ.com or Impact.com, like these places that have a bunch of different brands that just live there, right? And it's like, if you want to, you know, find a brand that's good for your site, like that's where you can go and search different categories. And so we got a lot of our affiliates there now just because of what we rank for and just the, you know, having been doing it for 10 years, a lot of the brands will reach out to us and say, hey, we had a brand reach out to us. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's like a clothing flipping company. And they wanted us to put them on certain pages. And I'm like, well, we don't do that. But if you had an affiliate program, we would consider signing up and, you know, that kind of thing. So so we do have a mix of, you know, these networks and a lot of direct relationships.
You're actually asking them for an affiliate program?
Yeah. So there's a lot of people in my industry that will do sponsored content. And I used to do that, but I felt like, once again, that freedom wasn't there. It's like, hey, you're paying me a fixed amount of money and you have the expectations I'm going to share it on Pinterest and Facebook and it's going to get this many impressions and, you know, I'm going to send you this many visitors and this many conversions. And I'm like, but that's, and it's short lived. It's like, you pay me this fixed fee for a one time, you know, deal.
And now I'm fighting for this one article to do especially well. And if I do well, I can't build on that, right?
I don't get any revenue in the future. So I'm like, so it's a win-win deal. It's like, hey, why don't we do an affiliate program, which costs you nothing, brand, right? And we're going to create the content. And our upside is, hey, if we rank it and we get visitors, we're going to get ongoing passive revenue, right? And the brand wins because they're going to get this ongoing source of leads, you know? We typically will say, hey, we don't do sponsored content anymore. But if you want to work with us, you know, if you have an affiliate program, we'd love to sign up.
You know what? I noticed that you don't have a link on your site for sponsoring. I have one on my site. It's been eye-opening. Sachit, who was running our ads for a long time, said, Andrew, I need a break. I said, great, I'll take over. I want to get connected to the sponsors. So I had the form that's on our site, mixergy.com/sponsor, I think it is, but the link is on every page. I had to go into my personal inbox. I'm pretty freaking impressed by the companies that are coming through that. Just filling in the form. I used to think Sachit was going out and just like drumming up new business all on his own. I wonder how many he was just getting because they were coming to the form. Not to put down his work, even if it's 50% is coming from him, and I know a lot are, the other 50% would be coming from the site, and that's pretty impressive. Gusto, gusto.com, you know them, right? The payment company?
Yeah, they're one of our affiliates.
I saw them on your site. They came in as a sponsor, as a potential sponsor by filling out the form. You don't, I guess people are using your contact form when they're interested in sponsoring?
They do. And I mean, like I said, we don't really offer it anymore. So we kind of stared away from it. I think.
But what about affiliates? If they've got an affiliate program and they're looking for you, the way they find you is by coming through to your site and hitting the contact form?
Yeah, which is buried down at the bottom of the site. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, but once again, and this is what's, it's interesting because I've fluctuated, right? Like it's more of a lifestyle business for me. It's like, hey, I have this passion to help people to transform their lives through personal finance education. I'm not interested in the brand has this agenda and this brand has that agenda. Like for me personally, I'm like, because that just causes a lot of work that I don't necessarily want to do, right? Because a lot of it sometimes involves me, right? And so I'm like, how can I build a business that can run itself and I can be involved as much or as little as I want, and it's not dependent on that type of stuff.
And the answer is for you, it's affiliate, it's content and largely affiliate products. That's it.
That's it.
And the affiliate products are largely on the site. You and I talked before about Penny Hoarder, which we both know. I interviewed the founder. I guess we both got his socks. I love that he sent me those socks. He sent me a bunch of nice stuff.
Socks. Yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised by how many times I wore the Penny Hoarder socks. I thought it would be some cheap piece of garbage because he's, you know, like trying to save money. No, he's really generous. Penny Hoarder socks are great. But he's got that big mailing list, right? That's a big source of his revenue. You're not doing that, right?
No, and I was listening to Harry Campbell on one of your interviews, and he's talking about how he's charging for different, you know, email blasts.
You will never say no to a sponsor, Harry, at the rideshare guy. If somebody comes in and says, can I sponsor, and he can't do it because he's running something else, he'll say, not that, but let's make something new up, right?
Yeah, and it's a model, right? Like there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for increased revenue. It's just, at the end of the day, I had to think, what do I want? Right. And I've had a lot of brands where it's just, the back and forth, the compliance, there's just so much sometimes that go with it in the personal finance space where I'm like, man, I just don't want it. I've kind of gotten past that. When I was growing though, I would take anything I could get. Right. I'd be like, yeah, you pay me $500 to do this. Okay. You know? And so we've just had the privilege now of being more selective in how we make revenue.
So how much of your revenue are you getting to keep? What flows into the bottom line?
So it's interesting, right? Cause you're like, hey, as a business owner, like I bought this laptop and I bought, you know, this monitor and stuff in my office and the standing desk. And there's all sorts of things like where you're like, hey, I probably have a lot of business expenses, right?
Right.
But they're for quality of life. So, you know, I'd say our margins are probably 70-80%. I mean,
it's 70-80% flows to the bottom line, even after you buy a nice computer for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about writers that are freelancers that are making, you know, between, let's say, $1,000 to $2,000 a month. You've got the blog manager. I don't want to really say her thing, but the expenses
are... But I get it. You're talking about it's because you decided to keep it light, you get to keep more of the revenue. I don't know if we talked about it on camera or not, but what's the revenue, the annual revenue?
So it's a little over $1 million a year.
That's phenomenal. All right. The majority of your traffic comes from Google, according to SimilarWeb, right? We're looking at, 85% Google on the social media front. It's largely Pinterest, right? YouTube number two somehow. Why is YouTube sending you traffic?
Yeah, so that's a love-hate relationship. I've really wanted YouTube to be like to work for me. And so we've created some really good stuff. And so it's starting to pay off. And I started including it in my email newsletter, which is kind of a double whammy, right? Where you're like, hey, I created these videos. I think they're good. Like we have 20,000 people on our email list. Why don't we send them out to them? So that's started to pick up for us.
Got it. Okay. So that's as easy as you keep your model. What's your version of get to play guitar, play with my kids after school? Like in the analogy that you gave of the Mexican fisherman who decided he didn't want to work hard just so he could have time to spend with his kids later on. You wanted to do it now. What's your version?
Yeah. So I'd say I'm living it. You know, I go home early on Fridays. On Mondays, my wife's taking a class. She wants to get another degree so she can teach at a college level someday. And so I come home early and hang out with the kids. We're traveling, you know, I mean, COVID's really put a damper on it, but we get to travel more and things like that. So I don't really have the tie downs that, like I told you when I worked for hardwood flooring and I'm like, could I take this time off? No. Or work from home.
Right.
I worked for a financial planner for a while. And I remember my wife's family wanted to go to Disneyland. And it was the day after Thanksgiving. And they're like, well, actually, we need you to work that day because the market is open half a day. And I did all the trading for the branch. And I'm like, you're kidding me. They're like, well, you can go, but you have to work. Like you have to, from your laptop, do all the trades. And I'm like, so here I am at Disneyland in a hotel room trading trades for people. And I'm like, I feel like a slave, you know? And so I don't have that anymore, right? Like I have those restraints are all lifted. So I don't feel like I have those restrictions. So I think I'm kind of there.
Where do you invest your money?
So this is interesting. I have the stock market, obviously, is a place. I did have an Airbnb for a while, and I was like, ah, that's not for me. So really, websites. I'm fascinated with how websites operate, grow. So I've created a portfolio of sites. And so really, that's one of the things where, and I know how to do it. So that's a place where, you know, outside of the stock market.
So you've got
market,
other sites that you're investing in. You're buying them off of a marketplace, I'm assuming?
No, we kind of do them off market. I did buy one from like a broker, but typically we'll approach people directly.
What type of sites? You know what? I had someone in my audience who came to me and said, I have this idea. I'm going to buy a bunch of sites and I'm going to run them. I go, that's way too distracting. Why don't you just pick one and make it work? And he heard me out and they said, no, but he stayed in touch. He says, Andrew, we're getting close to hitting $1 million in annual revenue from this thing that you didn't think was going to work out. I'm going to wait till we hit $1 million. I'll be on Mixergy and we'll talk about it.
That's awesome.
What are the sites that you're doing? He's not going to tell me until he comes on. What are you doing?
Yeah, so it's a mixed bag. So I have a home electronics site, like a tech site, a
tech
mental health
sites where it's affiliate commission.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, typically we review products and stuff. I've got a mental health site. I have a buddy that's getting his PhD in clinical psychology. He really wants to help people with mental health issues. He's like, Deacon, how can I get in this website thing? So we bought the site together. So I have a coupon site. It's kind of more of like a deal site. So just kind of a mixed bag. And really, okay, it's more about, you know, I don't want to be in the same vertical. Like, I don't want to be all in personal finance. So I'm kind of like, what are these other places where we can add value and help people that can help transform their lives, not just in personal finance?
We're basically looking at the same model, it seems like, in different verticals.
Right. Yeah. And I think here's the thing for people listening. If you're like, hey, I want to start a personal finance site. The thing that's kind of difficult about where I am is it's considered a YMYL site, which is your money or your life when it comes to Google. And so Google has a heavy, like, just criteria for those types of sites, right? Because you're giving advice that is going to affect people's investments, their life, their medical advice, stuff like that. If you know that your money, your life. And so it's a lot harder to do today than it was, say, even 3 years ago. But some of these other niches aren't as difficult that don't talk about that stuff. So that's kind of where I'm excited. I'm like, hey, where could I kind of grow in a new industry that doesn't fit in that category?
What's one that you haven't gotten into that you'd recommend someone who's listening to us consider?
So one that I heard that was interesting, and I thought about it, and I probably won't do it. So that's why I probably say,
yeah.
But the coffee niche, like home brewing, like I didn't realize how many people like to kind of brew coffee from home, especially during COVID, where you're like, maybe not a lot of people are going to Starbucks or whatever.
Right. I miss good coffee.
And I saw a site, I want to say it was doing like $300,000 a year, something ridiculous like that off of coffee.
And what they're doing is they're writing articles about how to make coffee right. And then they're linking to the products that they're using, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they're like, hey, we use this type of, I don't really know much about the home brewing, but this type of coffee maker or this type of mixer or this type of strainer or whatever.
There was a guy on YouTube who was doing that. He's just really into coffee. And what he did was, I never want to make coffee. I don't want to go through the trouble. I don't care how great it is. I'm not spending more than 5 minutes. I'm spending more than 1 minute making coffee. But I liked watching him because there was craftsmanship to it and he was creative. So he would go into IKEA and buy, you know how IKEA has those cheapo coffee things that look really nice, but it turns out they actually don't work very well. He'd go and get one and then he'd explain, here's why it doesn't grind the coffee well. Look at the grounds. Suddenly I care about that. You're saying the same thing, except in text form on your own site, so you don't have to You obviously don't get the leg up that you get from YouTube, but you also get the ownership that you get from having your own site. And if you're not linking to the IKEA one or not making money from the link to the IKEA one, you can also say, well, you shouldn't buy that. I wrote this other article about the one grinder that you should get. Here's a link to go buy it if that's what you're considering. That's what you're suggesting.
Absolutely. And that's the cool thing as far as entrepreneurs is you could just say, what are you passionate about? I mean, some people, if you're passionate about mountain biking, like you could literally just have a best mountain bikes for grown men, best mountain bikes for young kids, like whatever. Like you can make these sites and monetize them doing stuff that you're interested in.
I didn't think that was possible. I thought that it was just too competitive SEO wise. and that YouTube is where all the sexy time is, right? Like, I'm thinking about someone in my kind of friendship circle, Chase Reeves. He's got a thing, a site that is for backpacks, and I can't stop watching him talk about backpacks and a few other things that are like almost artisan and made and well cared for. But his YouTube channel is the beast. That's the sexy part, where he'll spend 30 minutes going over a backpack feature for feature. And then he'll say, by the way, go check out my site. I feel like YouTube is sending him traffic. YouTube is where my eyeballs tend to be. I'm not reading blogs anymore. There's no RSS feed. But you're telling me no, Andrew, even to this day, blogs and well-maintained personal sites will do well too.
I think it's harder. I'll say they can do well. They can do well. And I think the niches matter, right? You have to see what the competition is. But yeah, there's still opportunity there. I will say though, video, it personally, like I was watching a YouTube video before this. Like, I think that YouTube is going to be a huge opportunity for explosion. But here's where it comes. Here's where both of it works together, right? Say, hey, let's just say you're going to make a coffee homebrewing site. Well, then have the YouTube channel with the blog, right? Don't just have this one property, have them work together and then embed your YouTube video on the content, and they're sending traffic to each other, you know?
Right.
And so that's kind of what we do at Well-Kept Wallet. We have the YouTube channel. I also have a podcast, but it's kind of been, I haven't done one in a year or two. But for me, it was, I have audio to go along with the relevant blog posts. I have video to go along with relevant blog posts to kind of add value to them.
All right. The website is Well Kept Wallet. And of course, you guys are on YouTube too. I love how in the YouTube videos, it's you, not you a lot, but it's you the way that I'm seeing you now. And then here's how to make money as a teen. It's you wearing a backward baseball cap, which I know why you're doing it. And I still think you were right to do it. It definitely would look less relatable if you look like my college professor.
That one has some of my favorite B-roll of all time. I was like, what can I do to pretend like I'm a teenager? And I was like, Mom, can you get me another Mountain Dew? Like, just random stuff where I was like, what would a teenager say, you know? And so that was a fun one to make.
I do feel there was a period there where you were really getting into videos, where there's one about the books that change your life. There was clear care. You know, there you can sometimes see when someone's making a run for YouTube because they feel the passion. I saw that you felt the artistry in it. It became a hobby. Am I right?
I did. Yeah. I talked to this guy, Nate O'Brien. He has like 600,000 subscribers. And I was like really inspired by him because he's really good at it, really enjoyed it. And so I was like, I started doing video. I was like, okay, I don't care if I'm going to rank in YouTube for him. I'm like, I just want to do this video of like Millionaire Habits That Changed My Life or five books that changed my whatever. And I did really enjoy it. But then I start to get burnt out when I'm like, wow, I'm not getting the views that I would hope, right? I'm not reaching the people that I want to reach, you know?
Yeah, you put in effort and suddenly you see 64 views. Go, what is this? Why do you have to even like, why can't they not show the view count until you hit 2000? Why does the world need to know that this is only a 64 view? Don't embarrass me. Really, the tip for YouTube is, don't show the view count until somebody hit 5,000. I mean, don't show it publicly. The person should see what it is. The world has no interest in knowing whether it's 1 or 1,000. Let the people decide whether they like it or not without seeing the view count until it hits 5,000. It's intimidating already, right? And even if you'd be happy to have it up on there, if people would like the video without seeing the negative number next to it.
So true. I'm with you. If you want to put together a petition, I'll sign it with you, man.
Ooh, I don't think they care. They don't even listen to their top creators on YouTube. Their top creators are all angry, you know? All right. Thank you so much for being on here. The website then, I should say, is Well Kept Wallet. I should say that my kid, we're so anti-screens, but because of COVID, they're going through Zoom. I can't not teach my kid. If he's curious about something, I have to go the extra mile. So I showed my six-year-old how to send text messages from the iPad. I'm getting text messages while I'm talking to you with nothing. It's like freaking emoji.
That's I have a kindergartner. He does the same thing. He's like, can I text somebody? And all he does is emojis. So
and I would never have done that if not for COVID. I would never. We're not into giving it to them. Frankly, my thing is I come home, I take my phone, I put it in the drawer next to my bed, which has a charger built in, and leave it alone. I don't need the world there for me. And I don't want to be distracted. I don't want to model for them that I'm on the phone. But now they need the iPad for schoolwork, which means I'm going to get messages. Nah, all right, we'll live. All right, Deacon, thank you so much for doing this interview. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. Guys, if you're listening to me and you need to hire a developer of any kind, or if you know someone who needs to hire a developer, give them this deal, but please don't put it online. Apparently, Deacon, I told people, this is a great deal. You should put it online, right? So people are putting it online. TopTal said, no, we're not looking to give 80 hours of developer credit to anyone in the world. We're just trying to test out. Andrew, do your ads work? We're doing you a courtesy. Stop like screwing us. So don't post it online, please. But do tell your friends if they need to hire developers, they should go to toptal.com/Mixergy. Really, go research. You'll see this is the best deal they have. And if you want to try Trainual, you will get a big discount if you use Trainual.com/Mixergy. Since I'm a fast talking, not a New Yorker anymore, but New Yorker at heart, I'm going to give you the spelling. It's TRAINUAL.com/MIXERGY, Trainual.com/Mixergy. All right. This was great, Deacon.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks. Bye.